Shout out Shaq Edwards.
The majesty.
Oh my goodness.
It's professional wrestling.
Championship.
1000%
confirmed.
Stay mage and enjoy yourself.
Hey everybody, this is WWE Champion CM Punk, Straight Edge Superstar CM Punk.
This is WWE Champion Big E, and I'm with my guy, my man, the bald legend himself.
Hey everybody, Daniel Bryan here, hanging out with Rosenberg at Rosenberg Radio. Do you want to hear him talk about wrestling? Yes!
Hey y'all, what's up? This is Bianca Belair, the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best, and I'm hanging out with Pete Rosenberg.
Ooh. Hear that?
That's the cheap heat.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's number one sports and recreation podcast, Cheap Heat, is back. Something going on Friday edition of the show. Although I'm thinking of changing the name of Something Going On Friday. Like, not to say we won't have a Something Going On Friday edition of the show, but I don't know if this is a Something Going On Friday edition of the show.
Is this just cheaper heat?
Factually, something is going on, but compared to what that normally is, we're going to do a new sort of thing for this particular episode of the Friday edition of Cheap Heat. I'm your 24, your forever, what am I? The world's number one? No, your forever 24-7 champion, Peter Rosenberg, coming to you from New York City, coming to us from Philadelphia. It is the physically large sack guy, Greg.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I mean, you are the world's number one. You're the world's number one forever 24-7.
That's very sweet of you to say. And, you know, thanks to our amazing, amazing people who came over with us from Ringer Wrestling Show. While we have not been the world's number one, we have been as close as we've ever been.
Yeah, those Kelsey boys, it was looking scary for them.
I'm not willing to rule out that we can get those guys with the right episode still. It's in the conversation. So we were the world's number two for a few days. We were the world's number three. We were the world's number four. We're currently the world's number five. And listen, these algorithms are fickle, but the fact that we've been sitting there, currently the only shows ahead of us are New Heights, Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce, LeBron's new podcast with JJ Redick, boo, Pardon My Take, Dan Lebatard, and then us. It's been a good week.
That's a strong five, especially with us.
Yes, it is. It is a very, very cool situation, and we're super grateful. And if you have somehow started listening to the show on Spotify or on the Apple Podcast app, wherever you're listening, I promise we will not do all this nagging forever about the rating and the reviews. And y'all have been so generous and done such a good job. But if you're out there listening and you haven't done anything yet, please rate, leave a review, tell a friend, do all of those different things, because as you can see, it makes a huge difference. SGG, I looked. This is the thing that kind of blew my mind and got me a little emo about how much I love our people. We have 263 ratings and a perfect 5 stars out of the gate. And like, again, that's a small thing when you think about, the grand scheme of things. You know, I think the Kelsey's have like 80,000 ratings or whatever it may be, yada, yada. But for us and what we're doing, to get that much that fast showed an immense amount of commitment from people.
Yeah, and that's just love, like you said. Like, and I'm with you too. I know you said you didn't want to get too emo, but you know, this transition to going indie, I've been feeling the love the whole way.
The listeners, Shoemaker, everybody who reached out and had sweet Brian Waters and Ben and Kaz, everybody had nice things to say. Cal, everybody, you know, it's been awesome. But you know what? We have a whole podcast where we can talk about these things. Hold on. There's Natalie again. She's trying to get her tech to work. I know it's been frustrating. I just tried to push her in and she's already froze. There she is. Mrs. Mage, are you there?
I'm here, but I don't know how long this is going to last.
That's what she said. That's what he said. It's more about me. That's what he said. Natalie, so...
Oh, they're saying it. People are saying it.
So here's what happened, and we'll see. It may not work this week, so Natalie will have to come on a different week.
I'm really sad, though, because I was actually really excited for this specific episode.
All right, so I'm going to try. Let me give the intro so we can at least start and try.
Okay.
So here's the deal. Brian Mann and I were talking there. But Brian Mann, who in some ways is like the Rosenberg whisperer these days when it comes to a lot of the ideas that I have. We get together a lot on Wednesday nights. We'll throw on a little dynamite. We'll talk these days, unfortunately, we'll talk ish about things that are not going well. We'll wait for something cool to pop up. And in the meantime, we talk about careers and stuff like that. And we were talking about Fridays. And this is something Emilio had brought up as well. And doing something that's evergreen and that people can always enjoy. I'm not saying we're going to do it every Friday, but for this first Friday of the Mage era, I thought, let's do something Mage we've never done. We've done it like once, maybe twice, SGG.
I think it was like a handful of times.
But like in different ways we did do it. But this is going to be a more pure version of what we've talked about. And we are going to revisit a moment of history. And the moment of history we're going to revisit today is January 3rd, 1987. Saturday night's main event. Wore the shirt just because I'm that big a nerd. And the reason I did this one, SGG, is because
I can guess. Just based on the date, January 3rd, 1987, it's a few months before WrestleMania 3.
The big one.
The match that so many people still have as one of their top five, if not top one, matches in all wrestling history. In that moment when Hogan slams Andre, we don't get to that without this Saturday night's main event. Because even at WrestleMania 2, Andre's still a baby face. He's still beloved. I don't know exactly when he shows up with Heenan and things kick off on that road to WrestleMania.
I believe, SGG, that I thought it would have already just happened. I think it happens just after this.
Because there's something that happens in February.
I think it's actually early February. I think it was really only like 2 months of that before Mania. But everything else that happens on this episode is part of storylines for WrestleMania. You have Savage Steamboat. You'll have Harley Race and JYD. Like, all of the Mania stuff is in here. I don't think they teased the Andre thing yet. So then I brought this up to Natalie, and Natalie goes, oh, wow, this is perfect. You told me that you wanted to learn about the old school stuff because you didn't start watching till the late 90s. So you want to learn the 80s stuff.
Correct. And you said that this is like the most Mage event ever. And I think maybe we've watched it a little bit, but to watch it like this.
So what you're referring to being the most Mage event ever is Mania 3.
Right.
I believe you and I have watched pieces of it.
Right.
But it's going to hit different when you watch leading up to it.
Just to set the table a little bit more too, people got to remember, there's no Monday Night Raw in the 80s, right? You do get wrestling on Mondays, but it's really like a clip show. This is what happened at the house shows.
I don't think there was any wrestling on Mondays in the
80s. It was. Primetime wrestling was on Mondays. I've been watching wrestling on Mondays since the 80s, so.
SGG, you're sure? I never saw it on a Monday.
Primetime wrestling was on Mondays, because I remember they were like, oh yeah, next week we'll be live, and then Raw, and then that was it. It's been Monday Night Raw ever since. But the major storyline stuff did happen at Saturday night's main event, not just leading into WrestleMania 3, but we could probably do a Saturday night's main event pod, and there's a lot of major storyline stuff that leads to these big matches and moments.
All right, let's hit play. We're going to continue this conversation after we hit play. So if you want to watch along with us, I'm sitting there right now on Peacock, Saturday night's main event, January 3rd, 1987. Season 3, episode 1. I'm going to count to 3 and hit play, and you guys can watch along with us. 1, 2, 3, play.
Hulk Hogan, you've got nowhere left to go. You've got nowhere left to run. And pal, you got nowhere left to hide.
Hulkamania dies tonight. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, Mr. Wonderful. I like that idea, man. The supreme court of professional wrestling, the cage, man. Let it be the judge. And if a mere mortal man like Hulk Hogan goes down, let it be. But Hulkamania, Mr. Wonderful, will live forever.
Roddy Piper, do you remember when you did this to Adrian Adonis?
Oh, no, not the crutch to Adrian Adonis.
Tonight I'm back.
and it's payback time for a double agent. Happy New Year, Ruddy.
I love these intros. What I was searching for, the reason I didn't talk at the beginning was I wanted to play the real intro because they've taken it out. They've taken out the song Obsession. This thing they play here, this is not the theme song. So we gotta do me a favor real quick, Emilio, when we're playing this back for the people, give them a taste of the real thing. You need that Obsession. The vibe. That Obsession is the vibe.
And before we get all the way into it, I want to say shout out to all the parents of the wrestling fans of the 80s for letting your kids idolize Hulk Hogan, because I'm watching it now with adult eyes. The man's a psycho. He would not be my kid's hero. Did you see that promo?
Yeah, he's unhinged. And you kind of forget.
Every promo is like that.
Yeah, you kind of forget that he was a little bit more warrior-like than you remember.
Because like then he gets next to Warrior, and it's like, oh, okay, that's actually what crazy looks like.
Look at that young Vince.
Yeah, young Vince. Jesse the Body Ventura, of course, is in the middle of making his move to Hollywood.
Page where your champion, Hulk Hogan, will no longer be able to run from the wrestler to Hollywood,
pipeline is storied, and it goes way back. Because you got Jesse Ventura, you got Roddy Piper.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Jesse deserves his credit too, though. Like, Jesse made a few moves. Obviously, Predator was his biggest. And of course, in this time, Natalie, 10 years before or 12 years before you watched wrestling, Vince McMahon's character, you know, he's just a straight ahead babyface commentator. That's it. No tough guy, no owner, no nothing. And one of the things that always fascinates me about the look of these old Saturday Night's Main Events is the way they lit the crowd back then. It's so different. It's so dark in the arena.
Well, of course, Paul Orndorff, your man, betrayed.
Wait. What do you mean betrayed? He didn't betray anybody. All he did was wrestle Hulk Hogan in Cleveland. He beat that man. He left him laying. And tonight, when he's done with Hogan, he's going to be left like an old newspaper lining the bottom of a birdcage.
Thank you very much. Vince, apparently it's building up to one they've been talking about for a long time. Hulk Hogan to meet and defend against challenger Mr. Right, Wonderful Paul Orndorff. Back to you.
Important note here.
All right, this capacity crowd preparing for the
If you have not paid attention,
preparing for the steel cage
you'll notice that Paul Orndorff is coming out to the song Real American, Natalie, which is Hulk Hogan's song. Because the gimmick was when he started beefing with Hulk Hogan and kind of turned his back on Hogan, he was like, no, I'm the real American, and stole Hogan's theme song and started just using Hogan's theme
song. Wow. That's rude.
And the best, guys, you'll notice the best is the second Hogan comes out, Jesse the Body Ventura is like, I've heard this theme song before. It makes it sound like Hogan ripped off Paul Orndorff.
Wow. You can't mess with somebody's song, man. That's too personal.
Shout out to Danny Davis.
Early ref problems at the beginning of Danny Davis. Danny Davis, over the last few months here, is being established as a bad guy referee.
I mean, they need to bring that back.
Well, Mean Gene, it has been a long road, brother, but I can promise you it all stops here, man. All those Hulkamaniacs, they're ready for a new start in a new year. And this steel cage is a dead end for Mr.
And he even talks like a villain.
All right, as we head into 1987, Hulk, last year you established
Ventura,
yourself as
all
the
these heel commentators were right about Hogan.
In steel cage competition, why didn't you settle this feud with Orndorff earlier?
Mean Gene, the steel cage is the most brutal arena of human competition. It is.
Like, look at his eyes.
Resort,
like, why would this be a good guy in retrospect?
Did you catch the evil laugh that he did?
Thank you very much, Hulk Hogan, heavyweight champion of the world. I've got to believe we're part of history in the making. Back to you, Vince.
You bet. History in the making here in Hartford, Connecticut. And listen to the roar of these fans.
Yeah, but it seems to me, McMahon, that I already heard this music.
Seems to me that I already heard this music. Now, SGG, let's talk about, and you see what I'm talking about, the lighting in there? It just looks so dope.
And where are they in Hartford, too? Because this building...
Hartford Civic Center, baby.
Looks mage.
Did they have a Mania here?
They did. WrestleMania 11.
I was going to say 11 is in the same building, I believe.
Yeah. And it didn't feel as mage for WrestleMania 11. But here, it looks dope.
I'll tell you what, though, man. That blue cage. Natalie, do you even know about the blue cage?
No, it's fire, though. I was going to ask you about that.
Why was it blue?
Why was the cage blue?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's for me, it's the number one. I don't know if it's the number one cage. It's the number one nostalgic cage, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, Attitude Era, when they pop up with the black cage in this style, I'm just like, what the hell is this?
I'll tell you what, though. The reason I like the blue cage relative to the fence that they eventually went to, the blue cage looked so much harder. Like, it looked scarier. It looked more dangerous, didn't it? And I sort of liked it from a climbing standpoint. This is so nerdy, Jesus. Because the squares of the cage are bigger, you can fit your boots in.
Yeah, it works.
I don't know why they ever left the blue cage. I guess they thought it was distracting in the building. Little did they know they'd one day do a friggin' Punjabi prison match and elimination
prison.
Bro, if you go to the elimination chamber, you can't see half the shit there.
Punjabi prison is the worst. You did start out with the worst in terms of
it's brutal
visibility.
In terms of vision.
It's two cages. You got to see through two cages. One of them made of bamboo.
And by the way, don't forget that they're going to do that. They do war games where if you're sitting on the other side of the far ring they're not using in a match, like you're like, I paid for a front row and I'm 100 yards away.
Now, here's what I don't understand, too. Orndorff established that you can go out the door earlier. So why in the hell is Hogan running to try and climb up the cage? He was closer to the door than he was to that side of the cage that he tried to climb out of.
Isn't this the eternal question? It generally in cage matches, people always try to rely too much on climbing the cage versus jumping out the door.
I would never, never in a cage match, unless I'm literally trying to escape my opponent who's chasing me down, go for the cage. I'm out the door.
I just want to be clear for everyone listening. SGG would absolutely need the blue cage to try to escape.
Oh, for sure.
SGG and Hogan may not be aligned on a lot, but needing that blue cage, they're lining up on that one.
For sure.
What size shoe you wear, SGG?
Maybe I'm a 13, and maybe maybe in my younger days I could have done the fence, you know. But no. These days, blue cage only for me.
This is just vintage Hogan, by the way. This is, to me, when he looks the most like Hulk Hogan that he ever looked. When I picture Hulk Hogan, SGG, this is it. This is the epitome of prime Hogan.
This is what you, like, if you buy a Hulk Hogan action figure, the huge jacked action figure that you're going to get is this. If you look at, like, a vintage, if somebody's drawing Hulk Hogan for, like, a poster or some type of artwork,
this is what they're doing.
It's not the slimmed out WCW Hogan in the red and yellow. It's not even like the slim Hollywood Hogan.
No.
Like, this is it. Or even the Hogan that came back to WWE.
This is where you could get into when you think of these people not as human beings, but like cartoon characters and action figures. This one that we're looking at right here, I think is the most recognizable wrestling action figure of all time. This is it.
Yeah.
We can argue who's better. We can argue who's greater. I don't think we can argue that if you were to hold this look up right here, this silhouette, this is the one right here.
Hogan action figures kill to this day.
Why are they good?
It's not even that they're good. It's that they must be selling very well because, like, you see Hogan right there, right? He's wearing yellow trunks, red knee pads, yellow boots. That is the picture that everybody has when they think of Hulk Hogan. So you figure if they're going to make an action figure, as soon as they make the red and the yellow, they're done. But they found so many different colorways. They've gone to Hogan in Japan, Hogan with pants. They just keep pumping out these Hulk Hogan action figures. And the only reason is because they sell. And it's not, you know, for like a Bret Hart action figure, you would expect them to do the different colorways because Bret changed his gear up.
Right.
This man is mostly in red and yellow. And somehow Mattel finds a way to pump out at least 5 to 6 Hogan action figures every year.
they're both escaping the cage on opposite sides. Whose feet hit the floor first? This is a great finish, by the way. This is beautifully done. Oh, I love, and you, I, they switch the camera shot just as they're both hitting the floor. So Heenan grabs Orndorff and is celebrating with Orndorff, who of course has the heel referee, Danny Davis, raising his arm. And then you have Hulk Hogan on the other side of the cage celebrating. Danny Davis is pointing. Oh, who's that? Joey Morella?
Yeah.
I believe it's Young Gorilla Monsoon. Yeah, RIP Joey Morella. We never knew as a kid was Gorilla's. Oh, and now Danny Davis shoving Joey Morella to the floor.
The genius of this whole match, though, is that when they play, they came out to the same theme song. So even when they hit the music, you don't know who it's for.
I love that. I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
Because the Real American played for both of them.
By the way, let's just give the man his flowers. Orndorff had a big run. And obviously we know in WrestleMania 1 and 2, he was a big deal. By the way, does he never get on another Mania? Yo, keep in mind how crazy this is, guys. Paul Orndorff had feuded with Hulk Hogan for 6 months leading up to January of 87, where they now have their blow-off, as you're supposed to. I'm sorry, that's old-school smart booking. You have an old-school blow-off in the steel cage, all right? And Emilio just sent me a note here. Orndorff was dealing with an arm injury and working through it this whole time. Andre's not ready yet, right? He'd done the machine thing for a minute, but had not done anything else. Orndorff wraps up here. We end up getting Hogan Andre at Mania, and that's basically it for Orndorff until he ends up in WCW. Like, I don't know whether he ends up going on another run and is on house shows and things like that, but in terms of him doing big TV stuff, this is the end. A steel cage match with the hottest champion ever on NBC, and then you really don't hear from him again. It's kind of wild. You have to imagine Paul Orndorff does not know, as we're watching him wrestle on this Saturday night's main event, he's not thinking this is the last huge spot he's ever going to be in.
And especially, like, he's been working through it, that arm injury, whatever it is, this whole time. So he's just thinking, all right, I'll sit out for a little while, and I'll get back to my spot. But, I mean, in the 80s, man, you cannot give up that spot. It's gone.
At the time they have this match, Paul Orndorff is 38 years old. And it's basically the absolute high, and he never gets close to it again. It's a wild business. And meanwhile, Hogan would still have 20 years close to the top. If you include his run all the way back when he came back in 05, 06.
Well, you have to, right? Because he was champion. He gets that run and he comes back and he is champion and he faces Triple H and he faces Brock Lesnar. He faces The Rock. He faces all the top guys.
I'm counting the comeback after that, though.
Okay.
Because he kind of comes back again. That's the 03, 04. You have tag titles with Edge. You have Brock Lesnar. You have all that. But then don't forget, he comes back again when I was back. So one of the things that helped hook me back into wrestling was when I found it again in 2005, shortly after I found John Cena and Edge and Randy and all these people, Hogan came back again. And then I'm like, wait, I'm getting Hulk Hogan? And we get the Shawn Michaels. We get the Randy Orton. We get a couple of, like, long Hogan storylines, even in 05, 06. That was a moment I used to play on my old radio show. This is when I was doing nights on WJFK in DC, and the promo that I thought was so funny. I just thought this was so funny that Hogan, they would run it in the commercial all the time, and it's really not that funny, that he'd say to Shawn Michaels, if you wanted a match with me, all you had to do was ask. And that's, dude, that's 20 years nearly after this moment.
That's also nearly 20 years after he says to Andre, if you wanted a match with me, all you had to do was ask. You ran it back.
Heenan's trying to help Orndorff. Wow, what a great man. That's why he's the greatest manager of all time. He not only did he wake up Orndorff and almost get him out, but then he went to go, let me go. But Orndorff should have went to the door.
Now, see, that's what I'm talking about. The door that Heenan came in, by the way.
Yeah, Heenan had just run in the door to try to wake up Orndorff and send him out. Meanwhile, I'm going to go. Now, watch how Heenan bumps here for Hogan. Come on, right into the cage. Why does everyone else get tossed into the ropes and just bounce off the ropes, but Heenan flies over the rope into the cage? And now Hogan climbs out in the big blue cage with his big boots onto the floor, both feet, hands in the air, and still, Joey Morella raises the arms as Paul Orndorff slinks down the stairs, but it's too late. Hulk Hogan, ladies and gentlemen, he is still your world heavyweight champion. Oh, and there's a cameraman wearing the same shirt I'm wearing. Now, I have two versions of this shirt. This version is the nice one with like the open sleeves, and then I have the ringer style one with the tightest sleeves of all time.
Is the ringer black around it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's a ringer, but it's a black shirt with a black collar. But I need to stretch that shirt. It's insane. I don't even, it's pointless. And unless I can stretch that out, it's a future shirt for a child. Oh, old school replay. When they show the replay, let's see who actually got down first. Oh, so Hogan actually won the first time.
No, they're both their feet are down right now. It's at the same time.
I kind of feel like Hogan got down first, though.
I mean, Hogan's feet are flatter on the floor.
He was down first. Babe, Saturday night's main event was a fascinating thing, too, because it would preempt Saturday Night Live. So I've said this on the air before, and I apologize if you've heard me say it on a podcast before. I don't remember the last time I did say it. The reason it was like everything to me was I would perpetually be praying Saturday night's main event was going to come on TV. So much so that whenever the TV week would come out in the with the Washington Post with all of the TV listings.
Now, see, that's something you had to do back in the day. You couldn't just hit guide on the TV.
Yeah, there was no such thing as guide on TV.
There was a channel that you had to go to that might have had all the listings, but
No. What I'm talking about is even predating that. But yeah, that we got there. But I'll just say, like, I wanted to see it so bad that every week I would open up the TV guide, the TV week it was called in DC, and I would just flip to the following Saturday. Because it was always Sunday to Saturday. So I'd flip to the following Saturday, run my finger down to 11:30, and just pray it said Saturday night's main event. And when it did, bruh, I would be like, Nick, it's Saturday night's main event.
Guys, that Beauty and the Beast clip just now, I'm dead. That was amazing.
George the Animal stealing Elizabeth?
Yeah, George the Animal stealing Elizabeth.
All right, babe. So here we go. Go ahead, Amelia.
Wouldn't the war to settle the score, setting up WrestleMania 1, be the catalyst that really sets everything into motion? Because by WrestleMania 3, they're already...
I wasn't watching it at WrestleMania 1. I was just too young. I just wasn't watching it. So by the way, thank you, because I interrupted myself because I'm a bad host at times. The reason I chose this one as the first one is because when people say... when did you fall in love with wrestling? I don't know exactly, but I know it's 86, 87, and the culmination of like the highest heights of my childhood fandom was March 29th, 1987. That's like the pinnacle. So I don't know at what point I became aware of Hulk Hogan and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Elizabeth. I don't know when I became aware. It's sometime in the year preceding this, probably, that it was like on my radar. But by this point, Nick and I are like waiting to watch Saturday night's main event. We're watching Saturday mornings. And you have to understand, guys, if you're a younger listener who did not grow up in this, let me explain something about Saturdays. It was bullshit. You did not see good matches. You saw, you never got Hulk Hogan. It would be we'll hear from Hulk Hogan. It's like an episode of it was like AEW. It was like an episode of Dynamite. We'll hear from Mercedes Moné. You know what I mean? That's all you'd get from Hulk Hogan. We'll hear from him. So you'd watch Challenge or whatever it was. You might get one or Superstar SCG on one of those shows. You might get like maybe George the Animal Steel takes on Jake the Snake in one match that's like kind of something. But the rest you're getting, as my uncle at the time referred to them, we now know them as jobbers. As my uncle would say, you're seeing the stars take on dog meat wrestlers. As George the Animal Steel appeared to just legitimately choke Mean Gene. I promise you that hurt Mean Gene. Those two hands around the throat. I promise you.
That's who we got on Saturdays, though. It was Mean Gene in the control room.
And by the way, in going back and watching those, I really enjoy it. But it's just Mean Gene being like, and or what about Lord Alfred Hayes going, now from the pages of the WWF magazine, and it would open up the magazine and show you like things that were going inside. Sean Mooney, the underrated Sean Mooney.
Is that his own action figure? What's his name? The Beast?
No, his name's George the Animal Steel, baby. Mm.
I had a George the Animal Steel action figure that I loved, and I don't know where it is. It probably found its way into Dip's collection. He's got all the LJNs.
He's got everything. Where's Sean Mooney's phone number? I wanted to get a hold of Mooney. One of my favorite things I've ever done was that Best of Raw with Sean Mooney. That was so cool, man. God, the good old days. So now we get George the Animal Steel versus Macho Man Randy Savage. And again, with Elizabeth, I mean, Elizabeth was always hot, but this is just peak gorge Elizabeth. I mean, so Natalie, we'll watch it one day, but the setup was when Macho Man came to WWF, they made a big deal of who would be his manager.
He was the hottest free agent signing
of all time. Everyone's hot to get Macho Man.
Okay.
And he came to make the announcement. Everyone's waiting to see if it's going to be Heenan or Jimmy Hart or Slick.
Or Freddie Blassie was at
Freddie Blassie still there.
And I think Oliver Humperdinck was there too. It was every manager.
Every manager's vying. And then all of a sudden, Miss Elizabeth comes out. And it's the first we've ever seen of her. Of course, nobody knows at the time that the reason you're getting her is because she's Macho Man's wife and he brought her with her to WWF. So now, God, I don't want to pause here, but the music that you're hearing is the music of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, who Macho Man had injured a couple of months earlier with the bell to the throat. And this is the return of Steamboat.
Am I bugging? But didn't Ricky the Dragon Steamboat have the Chicago Bulls music?
It sounded kind of like it.
I think they changed it, but I remember him having that music and then getting into like basketball for a little while and being like, oh, that's Ricky Steamboat's music when they do.
By the way, now actual footage of me and Natalie on our wedding day as George the Animal Steel runs off with Miss Elizabeth in his arms. Listen.
It's kidnapping, McMahon.
He's going
to go to jail for this, I'm telling you.
Go get your girl.
The Macho Man just getting himself together, and he's going to look around and not find Elizabeth.
Babe, by the way, you have it backwards. Macho Man's the total heel.
Standing right in his way. The Dragon Ricky Steamboat.
It's the 80s. The guy kidnapping the girl is babyface.
Returning to the ring after suffering a crushed larynx from the hands of the Macho Man, Randy Savage, some time ago.
Nothing better, of course, than when Steamboat was interviewed after the crushed larynx.
It was the Macho Man, Randy Savage, who
here it is, here
from
it is,
the
Natalie.
Top rope,
dragging
the bell into the throat of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. That stirs up.
What a build this was to this match. The Hogan match they open with, because to be honest, you got to have Hogan on Saturday's main event, but that Paul Orndorff thing, it's kind of an afterthought relative to all these other stories they're building, because they know that's not even going to be their story at WrestleMania. These are all WrestleMania stories.
Like you said, we waited forever for this Saturday to get this. And then these are the key moments that lead to a show 2 months later. I think WrestleMania 3 was like March
29th.
Yeah. So
2.5 months later.
These are the moments that lead to a show 2.5 months later.
For me, it works the opposite. This is what gives me such an appreciation of what they used to do. That like, they listen, it's not as if they did not have a lot of TV. They were still on TV quite a bit every week. It was just a different world we were living in, and they didn't have to give us so much. And somehow they managed to stretch these things out in a way that was just beautiful. So, Natalie, that was another thing George the Animal Steel did, babe. He ate the turnbuckle. He looks like my Uncle Sam, doesn't he?
And I think he's my new favorite.
By the way, Natalie, he went on to be a school teacher. He was already a school teacher, maybe.
He's brilliant, actually, is what if I remember correctly.
Can we get him on the show? Emilio, you're our new producer. Get us George the Animal Steel.
If he's not dead, I'll look it up.
He's not dead.
Yeah, he's dead, bro.
Gosh darn it.
February 16th, 2017.
Damn.
All right, Emilio, guess what? It's a new era, and I'm holding everyone accountable. Get him on the show anyway.
Can we just have your uncle pretend to be him?
My uncle, and by the way, babe, George the Animal Steel was a big deal. Like, if I mention my uncle George the Animal Steel, he'll remember George the Animal Steel. Like, he was the man.
What is he doing right now? Is he eating his face?
Yeah.
I love it.
I wonder if George the Animal Steel was a great guy.
He looks like a great guy. Look at him with his tongue sticking out.
Oh, you know what we should ask? I'm gonna ask Ben Brown.
He would know.
He definitely dealt with him. It's such a great long story that gets you to Steamboat Savage. And then, Natalie, you get Steamboat Savage, and many people, myself included, at least for a long time, considered it the greatest match of all time when they eventually have it at WrestleMania.
I thought you said Hulk and Andre is the greatest match of all time.
So Hogan Andre has sort of, like, in some ways for me, it's like when I was younger and trying to be a little cooler, I was like, oh, it's Savage Steamboat because it's like the better wrestling. But then as the years went on and I appreciated the crowd reaction more than the in-ring work, it makes me think that it's Hogan, Andre, because of the way the crowd's reacting during that match.
I mean, wasn't that such an iconic match that like put more eyeballs on wrestling?
It put a lot of eyeballs on wrestling.
I feel like Hogan Andre was the flex. It wasn't the thing that attracted so many more people to wrestling, but I think it was the peak of Vince being like, "This, look at what I've done. This is what I can do. Like, I'm at the peak of my powers."
The reason why WrestleMania 3 did the numbers that it did and caused such a seismic shift in the business for WWF was built off the backs of Hogan and Andre.
No, I disagree.
How could you disagree? We've argued this before. How do you disagree?
Listen, it's a great match. It is iconic. I'm not saying that it's not. But what I'm saying is that when people say that it was a gamble and that it saved WWE, that all actually applies to WrestleMania 1. You don't go from arenas to a football stadium. And mind you, he never goes back to a football stadium again until the Attitude Era. But you don't go to a football stadium unless you are flexing your muscle. That's number one. Number two, the reason he packed it out is because WrestleMania 3 was not available on pay-per-view in Michigan. So if you were in Michigan and you want to see that show, you had to be in the arena. Every move that he made towards WrestleMania 3 was strategic. It was calculated, and it was moves that he knew that he could make.
None of that changes the impact of that match being on the card, though. That it's all good points, but it doesn't. He needs that match to fill the building.
No, he does, but it's not a match that causes a seismic shift. The shift is already in play, and Vince is holding out his power to the world. It's not the thing that makes WWE what it is.
It's overstating it to say that it's the thing. I get it. It's a many things. But I think what I would, where I side with Emilio is, if they book the Silver Dome and they have their pay-per-view deal in place and they're still not close to being rich, like, they made their money back on one and made money, but like, you can see what the quality of the product looks like. So nothing has changed. It still looks the same as 85. They're still taking a risk if the Silver Dome and Mania 3 fails. And they put so much in Andre and Hogan being able to sell the pay-per-view and fill the building. And without that match, I don't think they sell the pay-per-view or fill the building, even though I love all these matches.
I think the level of risk that they're taking wasn't that high.
No matter how you cut it, though, it's a monster, monster match. And there's SGG's number one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder what Harley Race, who had been such like a serious wrestler always, how he felt about wearing, look at the rubber string connected to that crown.
I am the king of wrestling, the king of all wrestling, and everyone shall bow to me in servitude.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the match.
I said bow.
You heard him.
Come on. Bow.
I'm bowing. I'm going to get the junkyard dog to bow like that.
Bow? That miserable mutt's going to be bowing. He's going to be bow-wowing. He's going to be on his hands and knees bowing. I can guarantee that.
You know how you know Harley Race was the real deal? Check out the nastiness of his tattoo once the robe comes off. In 1987, you didn't see tattoos on TV like that. Like, it's not now where the number one babyface in all of wrestling has a gigantic, crazy tattoo on their neck. So when this man shows you that he looks like he has the same tattoo that your great uncle who was in World War II has, that's when you knew, like, oh, he's just a bad MF-er. Like, you don't mess with Harley Race.
Or prison. That looked like, more like a prison tat.
So, Natalie, Harley Race had been a huge star for the NWA all over the South prior to this. We didn't know that. I'd never heard of him in my entire life until he set foot here. By the way, same with Junkyard Dog. Junkyard Dog had been a huge star in Mid-South and then showed up here. Harley Race was an NWA champion 8 times.
And that was the record prior to Ric Flair, too.
One of the true mysteries of racism in America is watching the way that the South interacted with black babyface wrestlers. If you want to truly not understand racism, like just not, like really, like, you know, if we had Ebro here, he'd give you some philosophy on why it makes perfect sense. I'm sorry. The reality is human beings are just insane. And watch the way racist white people in the South used to react when JYD walked out. And by the way, he wasn't this JYD who was called Dog, like who played into the dog character as much. Yes, he was Junkyard Dog, but he played a straight up badass.
Junkyard Dog, I don't know who His Majesty King Harley Race thinks he is, demanding that people bow down to him in servitude. I don't like it at all.
You know what I mean, Gene? This country never had no queen. This country ain't never had no king. And only time that my mom and dad ever told me to bow down to anybody, it would the good Lord above come on this earth and tell JYD where you going, up the ladder or down the ladder. I don't understand, baby. Handsome Harley Race, who in there do you think you dealing with?
All right, it's going to be a collision indeed. Junkyard Dog and His Majesty Harley Race. One thing, there comes a time when a king, perhaps, has sat on the throne too long.
See if this works.
Your call has been forwarded to an
audience. Oh, no.
At the tone, please record your message.
Let's leave him a message.
He's so pathetic. SGG, is there anything more pathetic than when Dipperstein is trying to get on in some means that's like not exactly what, like some remote audible?
No, there's nothing like it. And I'm going to bring the listeners into our group chat a little bit. He doesn't know his password to download the app.
Oh, look, and now he's figured it out somehow. Hold on. Dip, I thought you said you couldn't get it to work. Look at that. Turn your phone sideways. Give us the full thing.
Well, you have to flip it so that...
Wait.
Your camera changes.
He's walking.
No,
I feel like I'm FaceTiming with my mom or dad.
He can't do. No, now he's showing the wrong direction. No, don't do anything.
Dip, where are you?
I'm in Beverly Hills, where I belong.
He's amongst his people.
Dip, we are currently watching Junkyard Dog corner Bobby the Brain Heenan while wearing Harley Race's crown.
Oh, I see it. I see it, baby.
You see this beautiful, beautiful entertainment?
I do. I see it.
Look at this punch.
I mean, does anyone sell better than this man?
Oh my God.
I mean, there's no one that sells better than this guy.
Look, let's see how he takes this punch now while on his knees.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Harley Race is 28 years old in this match.
Dip, you'll appreciate the point I just made that if you ever were like unaware of how much of a badass Harley Race was, it was clear by how repugnant his tattoos were, which you just didn't see on television in those days, repugnant arm tattoos.
Yeah, you're right. They always hid the tattoos, or they didn't have them in general.
They look like sailor tattoos on his arms.
I wonder who chose the purple for Harley Race in this era.
It's the color of kings. He's the king.
I guess. Could have been red. I mean, you know.
Emilio Sparks has weighed into me privately on the side that his dad is built like Harley Race.
Mr. Sparks?
And by the way, I guarantee you that he is this terrifying Staten Island man.
I don't like the way JYD sells. He's not a seller. One of the worst sellers.
JYD sells as if he was like, listen, guys, this is what I'm willing to do.
I mean, there's no way that Heenan was able to hold back JYD. I mean, this is not even real life.
I know. How would that even be possible? How does he end up escaping the bow here? I forget. Let's see. Oh, the butt bump. Oh, the actual thump.
I was wondering what the thump was.
He's got one of the most powerful tushes in the biz today.
I want to get a pair of leggings that says Thump in the back.
Oh, babe. That you want to turn me on. That's how you do it. Wait. Is that Danny Davis? Oh, it's Danny Davis. Oh, now JYD's. By the way, why don't they go back to this? They have not had a real referee storyline in like 30 years.
Get him, dog. Yeah.
It was such a fun thing.
Yeah. I said that earlier. They need to bring back the heel ref. Get abused by a wrestler. The man should be suspended indefinitely. I think the last time we got it was Nick Patrick.
Yeah, there was a little bit there with Nick Patrick. That's right.
And Lil Nate and all that.
Lil Nate has a character. Did.
Could JYD go on the Mount?
No, because he was too jacked up in Mid-South. The king. In Mid-South, he was legit. He looked like a cartoon character in Mid-South. Now, he was here, jacked.
This is pre-Heart Foundation Danny Davis. This is like just...
It's about to happen.
This is right.
It's about to happen.
Yeah, this is showing the crowd that that Danny Davis is just more than a referee.
No. It's already like, I think, a couple months into it.
Okay.
We're seeing for a couple months that he's got bad tendencies. And now you want to talk Mount Schlumpmore. We mentioned this man, right?
Oh, by the way, no, but he is the definition of Mount Schlumpmore.
Oh, my God. Adrian Adonis, who, by the way, again, used to be pretty jacked up, and then just gained. I mean, I've always, should I have Ted? Is it time, Natalie, that I get one of those bags up there?
Oh, they're kind of dope.
Ted can get you the bag, the hat, and the towel.
Yeah, and by the way, and Ted might wear it all into the lobby at WrestleMania.
It's amazing how much Heenan was such a key figure on television and at this point in like, what is this, mid 87?
No, beginning 87.
He was just, I don't want to say in his prime. Maybe he was in his prime at this point as a manager.
Oh, this is it. It's prime Hogan. It's prime Heenan. Oh my God, look at that locker. They have an extra Saturday Night's Main Event t-shirt. They've got the jacket. They got the hat. They got the bag. And by the way, it's prime Mean Gene. How old do you think Mean Gene is here, guys?
I would say Mean Gene is probably 26.
Mean Gene, in this moment, is 44 years old. He's my age exactly.
He looks 68 years old here.
Listen, 44 in the 80s is not the same.
I got to post a picture of me and the Tux and Gene and the Tux next to each other at the exact same age. It's such a different time. It's crazy. God, one of my big... jealousies that I have of all of our friend, the great Renee Paquette, was how much time she got to spend with Mean Gene. She did so many shows with Mean Gene in Stamford, has so many stories about hanging with him. He was a hoot. Why do they keep reviewing this, by the way? The match is over. Hogan won.
By the way, they timed it perfectly.
Dip. They didn't have to time it perfectly. They never showed it at the same time. You're such a mark.
I know.
Yeah. They just did that.
They could have just dropped the time.
They could have adjusted the time.
Honestly, it didn't cross my mind though until I was just like, oh yeah, wait, I forgot. That's not the real video footage.
Here's a good observation. Hitting somebody in this era and beyond, hitting someone with a weapon of any kind was so headline news and was so damaging. You know, like at the Rumble in 90 when Mr. Perfect hit Brutus Beefcake with that chair, it was like he had hit him with like an atomic bomb.
I know.
You know, it was the same thing with this crutch shot.
And I will say, as we look at the fine, beautiful breasts on the Mr. Mount Schlumpmore, Adrian Adonis, I have to say, it's one of the things that no matter, I don't care if this sounds nerdy. The overuse of foreign objects and crazy things it's so stupid and it's messed things up. It's made things just like, in order for someone to, by the time you got to, can we just be honest? Is there anything more telling of how bad they screwed up with the elevation and escalation of weapons than the concerto? Really? The only way to hurt someone is to put their head between two chairs, which would kill them. Like, don't get me wrong, it was fun, the concerto, but it's ridiculous. Now, we don't know yet here in January 87 that Rowdy Roddy Piper is fake retiring in March.
I wanted to catch this man on his way to the ring. Come on in, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Big one for you tonight in the ring. No surprise, adorable Adrian Adonis.
We'll make this real short. I don't have a lot of words to say about this. This guy has humiliated me. You know, I made a lot of mistakes in my time. You don't get to where I am by not making mistakes. It ain't a shame to get knocked down. The shameful part is not getting back up, Adrian. Obviously, something you can do too. You're back. The fact that you're prostituting my butt just eats me inside. The fact that I got a chance right now in that ring to go get you, that eats me inside. I ain't fighting for money, brother. I'm fighting for pride.
He's got heart, he's got pride, and he is determined. He is headed for the ring. Rowdy Roddy Piper. Back to you, Ben.
Fake retiring for the first time, because he gets, I think, 3 WrestleMania retirement matches. WrestleMania retirement matches. He gets one at WrestleMania 3. Then he gets another one, I believe, at 8 against Bret Hart for the Intercontinental Championship. And then he gets another one at 12 against Goldust.
Roddy Piper at this point is 17 years old.
Yeah.
We talked about what helped WWF explode in popularity. Piper is part of that answer. Because before WrestleMania, you know, Emilio brought up the war to settle the score. I want my MTV. Piper is the driving force. Hogan got a lot of the credit because he was a champion, and rightfully so. Piper is the driving force behind a lot of WWF's popularity pre-WrestleMania 1 and even going into WrestleMania 1. Because when you watch that show, Hogan is in the main event against Piper. And when they talk about that cartoon that Hogan had, his antagonist and the leader of the gang of heels is Piper. So when you talk about WWE and their rise in popularity and going mainstream, you've got to talk about Roddy Piper in that conversation.
No, listen, Piper's a huge piece. There's no question. Piper's a huge piece and a big part of making them cool. You almost can't overstate how big Piper was. I mean, he was gargantuan.
You know, we talk about influential wrestlers and people whose imprints are all over. I mean, again, you got to give it to Piper because, you know, you have the Kevin Owens show. You got the Grayson Waller effect. You got Miz TV, Heartbreak Hotel in the early 90s. Those are all Piper's Pitt's sons. And Piper's Pitt was huge in terms of moments and that it created also. So yeah, Roddy Piper's got to get a lot of credit if we're having that conversation about who was influential and what gave rise to WWE's popularity.
Who's the main on this card?
It's basically WrestleMania, except Hogan had a steel cage match with Orndorff instead of a match with Andre the Giant.
Well, the funny thing about Saturday night's main events is the main event was not always the last match. Sometimes there'll be like a jobber match that would start after the big match. And in this case, I would say that the main event already happened. It was Hogan and Orndorff for the WWE Championship, which opened the show. So it's all undercard from here on.
Roddy Piper still in great shape. Again, as Dip said, he's only 17 years old, so why not?
Look at Adonis. He's taunting Piper. Taunting him.
Leaning right into
it. Trying to get him to make a mistake.
Ooh, wow, look at that. Not the first time a skirt's been placed over the head of Adonis. Adonis, for the run.
What does that mean?
Very good,
what does that line mean?
Roddy, Roddy Piper,
not
right
the first time a skirt has been placed over the head of Adonis. That's some sort of weird homophobic line I can't quite figure out.
It definitely is. It definitely is.
Roddy, Roddy Piper.
Now the referee's got to get in there. Morella's got to get in there.
But by the way, people are not getting caught in the ropes these days. He's on the hook. I would love to see a good catch in the ropes. I mean, Omos, I guess, has been caught in the ropes, but not enough. He needs to be caught in the ropes every single time.
You've been rooting so hard.
Can we talk about how dirty the baby faces fought in the 80s? This is the fourth time Piper's bit this man. Hogan would rake the eyes, do a back rake.
Sketchy as it may be.
What are these baby faces getting away with?
From George the Animal Steals. Protective custody.
Adrian Adonis, one of the great LJN poses.
You like the Adrian Adonis LJN pose?
Yeah, I mean, it's not practical to play with, but it was one of the most unique ones.
What's he doing in it?
he's like putting his arm, like his hand is like his arms up. His one arm. This is the sloppiest match I've ever seen in my life.
Every time I fought, it was pure slop.
This is Adonis at his heaviest, probably too.
I don't understand what could have happened. But I will say, he was still really good, even though it's pure slop. Wait till he starts bumping. Do you remember how he'll flip over the turnbuckle?
Yeah, he did that already. He did one of those.
Yeah, he already hit one. It's crazy. And Dip, you talked about not liking the way JYD sells. How about Adonis? I mean, everything.
Yeah, it's absolutely repug.
It's crazy that he was still this good at this weight. I just don't know how he got to this weight. I don't understand it. He's gargantuan. It looks like he gained 60, 70 pounds from when he was like the biker version. Here's the beauty of Piper and Adonis. They made it look sloppy intentionally. It looks like a fight.
Piper always did, though. It looked like a brawl. But look, let's face it. Everything that Piper did was sloppy.
His whole style was just a fight. It wasn't a wrestling match.
I don't think it was sloppy, but like P said, I think it was meant to look like he's a wild man.
But right now, me and Gino are going to be standing by, I believe, with the Hulkster.
All right, there is some celebrating going on in the locker room with the heavyweight champion of the world right now, Hulk Hogan. Come on in. You have got to be delighted with the way you have kicked off 1987.
Well, you know, I don't know nothing about the agony of defeat, Mean Gene. Just getting off on the all-natural high of the thrill of victory, man. Everybody in this place knew I had Mr. Wonderful beat, and I love it, man. I love it.
What is this bomber? I've never seen this bomber jacket before. This is an absolute beauty.
I have never seen this jacket. Hulk Hogan is wearing a red satin jacket. Look how gorgeous the collar is. It's red and yellow. Multicolor red and yellow Hogan colors collar. I believe it's the same as my Saturday Night's Main Event jacket. So it'll say World Wrestling Federation on the front and then Hulkamania on the back. I have never seen this.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bobby Heenan is a very devious individual. I don't believe he can be trusted. And who knows what's going to happen up in Toronto at the World Wrestling Federation President Tunney's headquarters.
Well, let me put it to you, Mean Gene, and all those Hulkamaniacs, the way it is, brother. I'm getting off on this victory. I don't care what type of controversy Paul Orndorff or Bobby Heenan stir up. I'm looking forward to the new year, new challenges, bigger and better things, man.
All right, happy new year to you, champ. Let's wait and see what happens.
Guarantee you Mattel is going to make an action figure with this jacket at some point.
There's still 6 minutes left in this show. What are they doing in the last six? There's not another match.
Sometimes they would start a match and we wouldn't see how it ended on these Saturday Night's Main Events, which I think was really weird.
Well, listen, we'll let this be what it is. And we'll see if anything interesting happens, but I'm sure you... Oh, there is another match. The Jimmy Jack Funk?
And it's gonna watch how fast this one wraps up.
Jimmy Jack Funk, one of the great funks.
So many funks, too many funks, not enough time.
They're funking and funking in this era.
Funking up a storm, confirmed.
Ooh, Blackjack Mulligan.
See, by the way, this is a very funny thing about how they did Saturday Night's Main Event. Hogan wrestles at 11:30. And guess what? Blackjack Mulligan, it's not the main event. It's 1 a.m.
Yeah, everyone's exhausted. They put on the snoozer match.
The show's over. So all due respect. The Battle for Texas, they're calling it.
But I'll tell you what, Jimmy Jack Funk's a bit crazy. Yes, but this man can be just as ornery as the worst of them.
You know, my question is this, though, McMahon. Who really want to fight the Texas?
Does he live for the funk or die for the funk is my question.
It's desolate.
Jimmy Jack Funk here is 11 years old.
Yeah, and Blackjack Mulligan, 26. Not a lot of people know that.
Hanging. Yeah, hanging.
We'll be back.
So anyway, we love you guys greatly. We hope you enjoyed us watching some old school 1987 WWF. If you didn't, tell us. If you loved it, we'll do more. If it could be better, we'll figure it out. But we're going to try some different things here, and we're super grateful to everyone who's been coming on this ride. Feedback's been amazing. I talked to so many of our listeners who were able to figure out how to make the move. And for a first week, the amount of people that did it was just awesome. So keep the emails coming to RosenbergBeats@gmail.com. Make sure you follow Cheap Heat Pod on Instagram. Stay active in the Discord. I already gave you the rate, review, all that spiel. And working on some big stuff, hopefully a big interview for next week, and we'll be back on Tuesday. How's that sound, guys?
That sounds very mage.
I don't want to give short shrift, of course, to the battle for Texas, which is wrapping up in front of our very eyes as Blackjack Mulligan stands tall and I believe gets a count out win.
No, he pinned him. He pinned him.
Oh, he pinned him?
Yeah.
That'll do it, though, for this Saturday night's main event, January 3rd, 1987. Dip, thanks for making time. Where are you exactly in Beverly Hills? It looks like you're standing in like a theater somewhere.
No, no, I am full-blown in Beverly Hills on the street.
On the street.
Oh, yeah.
You put in a good effort. And by the way, your signal on the street is better than the signal in your house.
I believe that. This is your new studio.
I'll just stand on the corner of Brighton Way and God knows where I am right now.
Well, everyone, we love you and appreciate you for being here. Shouts to Troy the Goy. Emilio, thank you for doing this tonight. Everyone, thanks for making time. And everyone have a wonderful Mage weekend and enjoy yourself.
Stay Mage.